sustainable, organic, local. It's really hard to remember a time when these words were not a core part of food culture and lingo. You'd have to go decades back. That's in part due to the enormous success of the slow food movement. And our next guest's name is synonymous with that movement. Alice Waters opened her acclaimed restaurant, Chez Panisse, in 1971 in Berkeley, California, and her approach has always been about sourcing regional, seasonal produce from farmers who she's built close connections with over many years. Alice has gone on to become a very influential advocate and activist and educator. For her, food is a social justice issue. Her edible schoolyard program, which kicked off in the 90s, has sown seed in schools across the USA. Her ideas and actions have certainly attracted their fair share of criticism and controversy too, and we'll talk about some of that. Alice spoke to the Sydney Opera House audience last week. Tonight, that's Monday night, she's speaking in conversation with kindred spirit Stephanie Alexander at the Athenaeum Theatre for the Wheeler Centre in Melbourne. And Alice, welcome to Australia and welcome to Life Matters.
Well, thank you.
And I think Stephanie Alexander has been trying to get you to Australia for a very long time. This is your first time. Why now?
This is the first time. Well, I met Stephanie at a slow food event 2 years ago called Terra Madre in Torino, and they gathered together people from 157 countries, and we had kind of a summit meeting of edible education there, and we realized that we were all sort of pieces of the same puzzle, that we were trying to put this together in a universal way. It is about, you know, it's really trying to bring people back to their senses, back to the garden, back to the table.
This emphasis on seasonal and sustainable produce, I mean, where did those ideas first enter your consciousness? Because that wasn't necessarily what it was about when you first started the restaurant, was it?
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't. I went to France when I was 19. And it was in the early 60s. And at that time, I think France was really a slow food culture in a way. And I had my mind opened up by that experience of eating, you know, just those oysters out of the water, just what was in the market. We went to the farmer's market twice a day. You had to have the hot baguette. You came for 2 hours for lunch with your family. You came home from school. All of those ideas, I just absorbed them, sort of osmosis. And when I came back to Berkeley, I really wanted to live like the French.
Want to live like the French.
But I really thought it was about food. Just about food. And I started cooking and fortunately reading the books of Elizabeth David, who had had an experience in France as well. And I didn't consciously say, you know, I want something organic and local. But in the process, after we opened Chez Panisse, we ended up there at the doorsteps of the people who were taking care of the land, the local organic people. And I was actually kind of against the organic movement in Berkeley because it was,
Righteous?
Associated with kind of hippies growing their own and just cooking rice with vegetables. And I wanted that kind of French, sophisticated, gastronomic approach, and I was looking to Escoffier, and I just turning my head to the health food stores that were full of the smell of vitamins and overgrown vegetables, and then in the process of looking, foraging, we really ended up with these farmers who were actually growing beautiful food.
And it was about flavour too. That was a driving force too.
It was the driving force. And of course, there's the driving force.
Ripe debate now about whether, in fact, organic is more sustainable, whether or not, in fact, it will feed the world. But at the heart of that initial step for you was flavour.
It was flavour. But just to say something about the word organic, I use that, but I'm really thinking of the biggest picture. I mean, sort of the permaculture, the biodynamic picture of growing food, and it's certainly growing it organically absolutely can have the same or more yields than conventionally grown food. I mean, this has been scientifically proven for a very long time. I think studies came out 20 years ago. But I think, have been questioning that because of the fast food culture that would like us
Well, it's not just that, Alice Waters. It also is that the great industrial complex of food production has claimed organic as its own now.
That's right.
I mean, even Walmart has got in on the act. And you have to come to that with some sort of scepticism or at least a curiosity about then what that means about the original claims of the movement.
Exactly. I mean, and that's why when we wrote the certified organic ordinance for the state of California, we put into that a lot about farm workers' pay, about a set of values that were beyond just no herbicides, no pesticides. And the standards, the national standards, are not as rigorous as those in the state of California. And the whole movement has an ethos that goes with it. So I'm always going out to the farm and talking to the farmer. I want to know that we are really talking about the same thing.
Alice Waters is with me this morning on Life Matters. Really, she is the founder of the slow food movement with the beginnings of her restaurant in Berkeley, California in 1971, Chez Panisse. You acknowledge the rise of the fast food movement or culture. I don't know that it's a movement, it's a culture. Quick turnaround food, packaged, chopped up, pre-chopped vegetables, you know, packets of spinach, you know, it's all here too. And yet there's also a rising interest in farmers markets and slow food culture. And I just wonder whether, though, there's a class divide going on, that there's a distinction between the elite and the everyday in that contrasting growth in both of those cultures.
Well, I certainly think that the fast food culture is trying to make us believe that it's about that we're in an elitist movement and they are with the people. They are producing something that's fast, cheap, and easy, and that's what people want. They don't want to spend a lot of time in the kitchen. They want to get on with the good things in life. And it's a real cultural takeover. And I have come to understand the words of Briot Savarin way back when he said, you know, we are what we eat. The destiny of the nation depends on how we nourish ourselves. And when we eat fast food, we absorb the values of it. We're there eating in a minute, where we don't care where the food came from. We want it the same 24/7. We want it, you know, not to we throw away the waste. It doesn't matter. You know, somebody else will clean it up for you.
You've said that good food is a right, not a privilege. And that's a contentious statement, because also attached to good food is often a big price.
It is, but I think food can be affordable. But when it's cheap, somebody's missing out. And the person who's missing out, 9 out of 10 times, is the farmer. So I think we can cook affordable food. And it's important to think about the money that we make and the proportion of that that goes to food and the purchasing of food. It's something so precious. We always have been willing to pay for it. But now other things are much more valuable because we've been indoctrinated.
Stuff.
You know, stuff. We're out to buy stuff.
And store it.
And store it. We have big storage units.
The great irony.
I mean, it's kind of craziness that we're doing this, accumulating. And I think that we have to think and understand this way that we're being indoctrinated and resist that. And the only way that I can think to really resist it with pleasure is to go to that farmer's market, meet the people who are growing the food, buying that food and taking it home and eating it when it's alive and delicious. I'm for winning people over through taste and through the camaraderie of the table.
It's a great seduction flavor. Let's leave the pantry for a moment and leave the fast food section of the supermarket and head to the classroom, because you have managed to get the edible school garden program not just into the vacant lots of next to schools as it started for you, or the corner of the school oval or wherever it might be. You've actually managed to get it into the curriculum, maths, English. Why?
Well, when I first went to the school in Berkeley, Martin Luther King Jr. Middle School, I looked at the land that they had that was available. I know the principal wanted me to plant a garden. That's what he wanted. But when I walked around the school, I just said, oh my goodness, I don't just want a garden. They need a place to eat. They were eating from a little snack shack at the end of the schoolyard. And I thought, well, what's happened to the old cafeteria? I don't want to just have a garden. I think there needs to be a connection to the food service. And then I had the idea that, you know, you really needed to go from the garden to the kitchen to the, and, you know, back to the garden again and take all of the subjects, the academic subjects, and connect them to these labs, if you will.
How? Give us an example of how that works. Because, of course, again, and look, you've received criticism for this too, that somehow you've hijacked the mainstream curriculum when that is vital and might be costing the education of the most vulnerable children who are there. They want to learn reading, writing, arithmetic. They don't need to learn how to garden, thank you very much, at school.
Well, certainly that criticism has been present, but when you come and see what's happening, first of all, interactive education, everyone knows that that is the best way to engage children to really learn in a deep way. Whether it is a math class that you do in small groups with kids, you know, moving beads on a string, the fact that they're using their hands, their eyes, they're using all their senses to be thinking about the subject. And I'm saying that you're going into the garden and you are measuring those beds as part of the math class. You are calculating the seeds that you are planting. And you're eating a raspberry from the raspberry bush at the same time. And these kids like to be out in the garden doing their math.
Math class has never sounded so good.
In the kitchen doing their history class. And they may be studying sort of Egypt, but they are preparing at the same time the food of that place. They're making pita bread. and they're talking about the grains that were grown in that part of the world. They're looking at the map. They're thinking about the nutrition of that place. They're writing the recipes down as part of an English composition class, but it comes alive for them. And they never forget it, but they never forget how to make the pita bread either.
How do you measure the success of that program? I mean, clearly it's been picked up in thousands of schools now, and it's inspired Stephanie Alexander's Kitchen Garden Project in schools right across Australia too. But how do you measure success other than the feel good?
Well, the University of California did a study about whether children that were involved in this program ate more fruits and vegetables and whether they had better academic scores. And in fact, it proved that they did. But just walking into the space and into that school, you know that. It's too bad you can't measure a kind of enthusiasm, a kind of pleasure of work that the kids have together. And they work in teams. It's not a middle school where all the girls are there and all the boys are there. They're doing the most important work probably for their lives, is learning how to take care of the land, learning how to nourish themselves, and learning how to communicate at the table. It's like a basic education we need for the globe. And That's something. It's something, I think it's something magical and something so desirable.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on Life Matters this morning. Thank you, Alice Waters.
Thank you.
Alice Waters, chef, author, food advocate, educator, restaurateur, vice president of Slow Food International, apparently, too. And you can catch Alice Waters. She's appearing at the Wheeler Centre in Melbourne tonight, Monday night, in conversation with, homegrown chef and educator Stephanie Alexander, whose own kitchen garden project draws heavily on Alice's edible schoolyard model. And we've been filming this interview, so you can check out the RN YouTube channel if you feel that the visual, you want to respond to your visual sensory appeal. Yeah, you can watch Alice Waters on the RN YouTube channel. And all the details of her presentations in Australia on the Life Matters website. I think tonight might be her last. So that's abc.net.au/RN.